I called 911 at 2:14 in the morning. I know the exact time because I kept the call log on my phone for 2 years. I kept it the way people keep evidence, not because I thought I would need it, but because something in me understood that the night I called for help might one day need to be explained. I'm glad I kept it. I've needed to explain that night many times since, and the timestamp is always the first thing anyone asks for. I had a split lip, I had fingerprint bruises forming on my left forearm. I had called because he had escalated past anything that had happened before. And for the first time in 3 years of this, I was genuinely afraid I might not be okay in the morning. When the officers arrived, he had a scratch on his cheek. I had made that scratch when I pushed him off me. He told the officers I had attacked him first. They charged us both. The term for this is a dual arrest. It happens when responding officers determine that both parties in a domestic dispute show visible evidence of physical contact, and the officers elect to arrest both individuals rather than identify a primary aggressor. It is legal in most jurisdictions. It is documented as disproportionately applied to Black women who call for help. And it is one of the most effective mechanisms by which the criminal justice system transforms domestic violence survivors into defendants, not through any single act of malice, but through a policy that treats a defensive reaction and an attack as legally equivalent. I didn't know any of this when the officer handed me the citation. He had a scratch. I had bruises. The citation in my hand said I had committed a domestic assault. The citation in his hand said the same. I remember standing in my own kitchen after the officers left and trying to understand what had just happened. He was in another room. I was holding a piece of paper that said I was an assailant. I had bruises on my arm from where he had held me against a wall. And I had a piece of paper that said I was the same category of person as the man who put them there. I didn't sleep. I found a number for a legal aid line and called it at 6 in the morning. And a very tired woman who I still think about sometimes told me what dual arrest was, told me it happened more than people knew, and told me that the most important thing I could do right now was document everything I could document about the injuries on my body before they faded. I photographed everything. I went to an urgent care that morning and asked them to document the bruises in my file. I kept the photographs on 2 separate cloud accounts because I didn't trust one. I kept the timeline. I kept the call log. I had learned something in that kitchen at 2 in the morning. The call I made for help was now a legal record that required management. What I did not know then was that the police report contained a notation I would spend the next 2 years trying to get corrected. In the box on the report labeled evidence of mutual combat, the responding officer had checked yes. There is a specific meaning to that notation in a police report. It indicates that both parties were observed to have been engaged in equivalent offensive physical contact, as distinct from one party attacking and the other defending. There is no evidence in the report of what basis the officer used to reach that conclusion. There is no documentation of a witness statement, no notation about relative severity of injuries, no description of the physical environment that might have indicated aggression versus defense. The box was checked. That notation shaped everything that came after. My public defender, I could not afford a private attorney, was overloaded. I was one of dozens of cases. He explained the charge to me in a 6-minute meeting in a courthouse hallway, 2 days before my first hearing. He said, "The evidence against you is minimal, and if we enter a diversion program, you do community service and this goes away." He said this as if it was a solution. I asked him what it meant for my record if I completed diversion. He said, "Technically, it's not a conviction. It's a diversion completion." I asked him what it meant for my immigration status. "I am a citizen, but my mother is not, and I live with her." He said that wasn't really applicable here. I asked him what it meant if I ever tried to get a protective order against the man whose bruises were still on my arm. He started to answer and was called to a different part of the hallway. I entered diversion. I completed the program. I did the community service. The charge was conditionally dismissed. He did the same. He completed the same program. His charge was also conditionally dismissed. We are in the same legal category. We always will be. The dual arrest system does not see the photograph of my arm. It does not compare the severity of injuries or evaluate the history of a relationship or distinguish between the person who grabbed first and the person who reacted. It sees two people with visible evidence of physical contact in a domestic situation, and it creates two records. There are jurisdictions that have moved toward mandatory primary aggressor determination policies, which require responding officers to identify one primary aggressor in a domestic incident rather than defaulting to dual arrest. Research in those jurisdictions has shown reduced dual arrest rates and, in many cases, better outcomes for survivors. There is no federal mandate. There is no consistency. The decision about how the law processes a person who calls for help is made by the jurisdiction they happen to live in, the policies of the precinct that responds, one, the individual judgment of officers who may have received anywhere from a few hours to a few days of domestic violence training in their entire career. I lived in a jurisdiction without a primary aggressor mandate. The officer who responded to my call had the legal authority to determine that what happened in my apartment that night was mutual. He used that authority. The notation he made in a box, yes, is a legal fact that I cannot change, cannot expunge, and must disclose in certain contexts for the rest of my life. There is research on this. It has been conducted over decades by domestic violence advocacy organizations and by academic scholars who study the intersection of law enforcement and intimate partner violence. The findings are consistent. Dual arrest policies are applied at higher rates to Black women and women of color than to white women in comparable situations. The research also documents that dual arrest, when applied to a survivor, significantly reduces the likelihood that the survivor will call for help in the future. Not just that specific survivor, any survivor who hears about that outcome from anyone in their network. The deterrent effect is documented, quantifiable, and to my knowledge has never meaningfully changed national policy. I became part of that statistic. The next 3 years of my life, I was someone who had called the police once and been charged. There were two incidents after the night I called, incidents I did not report, where I made a specific calculation about whether calling would help me or hurt me. I include this not to make a political argument, but because it is what happened, and the system that processed my call as mutual combat participated in the conditions that made those 3 years possible. I left him 6 months after that night. I stayed with my mother for 3 months. I found an apartment I could afford on my salary alone, which was less than what I had been paying in our shared place, and which required me to move to a neighborhood I wasn't as comfortable in. I spent the first 4 months jumping at noises. I spent the first year checking the deadbolt on my door before I went to sleep. Leaving is its own kind of work. It is not a single act, but a series of decisions about safety and stability and money and fear, made incrementally in a state of exhaustion. There are organizations that specifically work on dual arrest and the criminalization of survivors. The National Domestic Violence Hotline maintains resources for survivors who have been arrested or charged in a domestic violence situation. Legal aid organizations in many jurisdictions have units specifically designed for survivors who are navigating criminal charges. If you are in that situation right now, if you called for help and ended up charged, you are not the only one, and there are advocates who understand the specific shape of what you are dealing with. I am out now. I have been out for 4 years. The charge is conditionally dismissed. He has not contacted me in 3 years. The advocacy framework that has emerged from decades of research into this specific pattern is called the criminalization of survivors, and it extends well beyond dual arrest. It includes prosecutions of women who kill abusive partners in self-defense and receive no standing your ground protections. It includes the incarceration of women who are trafficked and then charged with prostitution. It includes the prosecution of mothers who fail to protect their children from an abusive partner, charged for not preventing the thing they were also surviving. Across all of these situations, the legal system encounters a woman who has been harmed and converts her into a defendant. I am not arguing that all of these cases are the same. They're not. I am pointing at the pattern. When harm arrives at a woman in a certain set of circumstances, circumstances that often include poverty, blackness, limited legal resources, and a prior relationship with the legal system, the response of the system is frequently to add to the harm rather than to remediate it. The mechanism is different in each case. The direction is consistent. What I needed that night was for someone to look at the evidence and make a determination about what had happened in that apartment. There were two people with visible injuries. The injuries were not equivalent in severity, location, or pattern. A determination was possible. It was not made. That box was checked without that work being done. I am not saying don't call. I am saying know what calling might mean where you live. Know that the law is not uniform. Know that the officer who arrives may or may not have received meaningful domestic violence training. Know that the notation in a box on a form you will never see until it matters can determine what kind of help you receive, and that the box will be filled in within minutes by someone who has been in your space for fewer than 15 minutes, who does not know your history, who will not be held responsible for what the notation means to your life 2 years later. The call log still says 2:14 in the morning. I still have the photographs. The bruises are gone. The notation remains. Was it justice for both of us to receive the same charge, or did the law require equality in a situation where equality was not the truth?